Today, I'd like to look at four verses that the Zen teacher Feng Gong wrote. As I said yesterday, we don't know much about him. Han Shan, Cold Mountain, mentioned him a couple times in verses, as did Cold Mountain's Dharma companion, Shi Te, or in English, pickup. Cold Mountain wrote, "I usually live in seclusion, but sometimes I go to Kuching to call in on the Venerable Feng Gong, or to visit with Shi Te. But I always go back to Cold Mountain alone, observing an unspoken agreement. I follow a stream that has no spring. The spring is dry, but not the stream." He also alludes to Feng Gong in another verse when writing about the inevitability of death and the ephemerality of life sometime after Feng Gong's death. Shi Te, pickup, who actually was given his name by Feng Gong, who picked him up from the bushes where he had been abandoned as a very young child, wrote of Feng Gong saying, "Han Shan is a cold mountain, and pickup was picked up. Feng Gong knows our faces, though fools can't recognize us. They don't see us when we meet. When they look, we aren't there. If you wonder what the reason is, it's because we have the power of doing nothing." For those of you who weren't here for yesterday's talk, here's a quick recap. Feng Gong, whose lineage we don't know, lived in the Tiantai Mountains and was the teacher at Kuching Monastery in the 9th century. And much of the history about him, Han Shan and Shi Te is as misty as the cloud-covered mountains they lived and roamed in. It was said Feng Gong spent his days hulling and pounding rice for the assembly, teaching and responding to questions, and singing sutras for enjoyment through the night. He lived in a small room behind the sutra scroll room with a tiger, and he encouraged and supported Han Shan and Shi Te in their rather eccentric lifestyles and mannerisms, and he imagined them to be embodiments of Manjushri and Samantabhadra. Red Pines, The Collected Songs of Cold Mountain, published by Copper Canyon Press in 2000, has a picture in it of the rock, one quarter moon-shaped Feng Gong Bridge, which sits at the entrance of Kuching Temple. And on that bridge, on Feng Gong's bridge, horses cross and donkeys cross. And maybe during this retreat, you too will cross. Feng Gong was not a poet, but he wrote the following, which I'd like to then comment on. And this is in Red Pine's book. He wrote, I have been to Tian Tai maybe a million times, like a cloud or river drifting back and forth, roaming, free of trouble, trusting the Buddha's spacious path, while the world's forked mind only brings men pain. Sinking like a rock in the sea, drifting through the three worlds, poor ethereal creature, forever immersed in scenes, until a flash of lightning shows that life and death are dust in space. Whenever Cold Mountain stops to visit, or Pickup pays his usual call, we talk about the mind, we talk about the moon, and we talk about wide open space, because reality has no limit, so anything real includes it all. Actually, he says, there isn't a thing, much less any dust to wipe away. And whoever can master this doesn't need to sit there all stiff, lonely, and aloof. So I've been to Tian Tai maybe a million times, like a cloud or river drifting back and forth, roaming, free of trouble, trusting the Buddha's spacious way, while the world's forked mind only brings pain. These lines remind me of the opening in the Song of Enlightenment, which says, there is the leisurely one, walking the way beyond philosophy, not avoiding fantasy, and not seeking truth. Tian Tai in English is heavenly terrace, and it is a long range of mountains with many temples sprinkled about that monks, nuns, and lay folks could wander to and fro to hear talks, to do zazen, to help with work and burn incense. The specifics, the particularities sound pastoral, idyllic, utopian almost, making it easy to dismiss as distant from the hustle and bustle of contemporary scenes that we live in, managed by clocks, computers, cell phones, and laid over by flattened cement. The landscape, the scenery is indeed different, but the mind being expressed, one that is open to the vastness of what is offered. The landscape and the scenery is indeed different, but the mind that can respond like trees do to the wind, like flowers do to the sun, and like creeks to rain, is still available to us. The mind that woke up to the Venus star is your very own mind. The body of leisure within the vastness of Buddha fields, is your body. Yes, the scenery is different, the culture different, the habits and attitudes different. But the yearning, the desire to wake up to what is not different. As I've said before, the bustle and hustle of our contemporary time is not the truth of reality. That is simply one offering. It is a proposition made by a culture of acquisition, competition, and indulgence. And we can choose. We can accept it or refuse. We can turn towards or away. We can admit to the surface or look below or behind. There is the leisurely one, walking the way, like a cloud or river, back and forth, moving in the circle of wonder, trusting the spacious pathways of the Buddha fields. So how does one open to that? How does one nurture that heart-mind? That heart-mind, this heart-mind, is the mind of enough, of knowing how much is enough, and knowing how little is enough. And that type of knowing, knowing how much is enough and how little is enough, is the practice of contentment. And in a retreat in Zazen, the shape and the taste of contentment is committing to your one and only practice. By committing and staying with, by staying with mu, by staying with hearing, by staying with each number, no matter the scenery or environment, no matter the hustle and bustle of the culture, no matter what decade or century, staying with is the practice of knowing what is and is not enough. No matter how many or few thoughts, no matter how many or few feelings, no matter how few or many sensations, your one and only practice is enough. No more is needed, but no less is warranted. The posture we take is upright, whether on a zafu, a kneeling bench or chair, with body relaxed but poised, not leaning left or right, eyes aren't closed, neck isn't stiff, and hands are in one of two mudras. And you stay right here, whether rain or sleet or snow or sunshine, right here, in the center. Here in the center is enough, because the center is multi-centered and the self is displayed in array as the many beings of the universe. though there may be no antidote for climate change and the havoc it will wreak. This mind, the mind of enough, the mind of contentment, the mind of Zazen, is the antidote. Hui Nung wrote, in your own heart mind, take refuge in realization and rely on it. Then bias and confusions won't arise. Reducing desire and knowing enough. This is what we call honor among the two-legged. So let me read that again. Hui Nung wrote, in your own heart mind, take refuge in realization and rely on it. Then bias and confusions won't arise. Reducing desire and knowing enough. This is what we call honor among the two-legged. And since I just brought in the sixth ancestor, Hui Nung, I'll jump over Fengan's next verse and look at the final third and fourth ones, which go like this. Whenever cold mountains stops to visit, or pickup pays his usual call, we talk about the heart mind, the moon, or vast open space, because reality has no limit. And so anything real includes it all. But then he writes, actually, in actuality, there isn't a thing, much less any dust to wipe away. And whoever can master this doesn't need to sit here completely alone, stiff, lonely. Actually, there isn't a thing, much less any dust to wipe away. Alludes to a historical Zen event with the sixth ancestor, Hui Nung, from the previous century. So about 100 years earlier, the young Hui Nung, as he was returning from the forest with a bundle of firewood, heard a lone monk chanting the Diamond Sutra. When the monk chanted, dwelling nowhere, bring forth that mind, something subtle but essential shifted in the young listener. He waited for the monk to finish his chanting and asked him where he could learn about such a thing. And the monk told him about the fifth ancestor, Hui Jing. The young man went home, immediately took care of his family's affairs, and then set out to sit and study with the fifth ancestor. And after some time, Hung Jin decided to retire and to name a successor. And to do that, he announced a contest. He said whoever thought he might be ready to step into the teaching seat should write a poem. And Hung Jin would select the best poem. One night, the head monk wrote a verse on the wall of the monastery saying, "The body is the Bodhi tree. The mind is like a clear mirror. Moment by moment, wipe the mirror carefully. Let there be no dust upon it." According to the legend, the young illiterate layman, Hui Nung, had another monk write his verse on the wall, which read, "Bodhi really has no tree. The mirror too has no stand. From the beginning, there is nothing at all. Where can any dust alight?" And in some versions of the Platform Sutra, where these verses were taken from, Hui Nung says he also then composed a second gatha that goes like this. "The mind is the Bodhi tree. The body is the mirror's stand. The mirror itself is so clean. Dust has no place to alight." So this next is an aside, and then I'll get back to Hui Nung, the mirror, and Feng Gan. One of my favorite Thich Nhat Hanh gathas is, "Listen, listen. The sound of the bell brings me back to my true self." This is the side of practice. Continually returning to this, now. Continually dusting the mirror as greed, hatred, and ignorance arise relentlessly. Practice is to use the sounds to remind yourself to come back. Practice is to use thoughts to remind yourself to come back. This is carefully wiping the mirror moment after moment, sitting period after sitting period, block after block. But the other gatha is, "Listen, listen. That beautiful sound is my true self. Each thing, sound, dust, thought, each thing, wiping, hearing, standing, sitting, is it. There is nothing. There is nothing to come back from, because there is no leaving. For where could you ever leave? Where could you ever go? There is no tree. There is no stand. There is only three Dharma friends, three companions of the way sitting together, talking about the vast spaciousness of the full moon's heart mind. For there is nothing else. Reality has no limits, no boundaries, no walls. So it includes all. Take refuge in realization, and nothing is left out because there isn't anything outside of it. Hui Nung wrote from the beginning, there is nothing at all. And Feng Gan echo that reality. And so that is what Zen stands on, the groundless ground of only open hands and open hearts. So now back to Hui Nung's mirror and Fen Gan's echo. The image of the old mirror represents the coincidence of opposites and concurrently the coincidence of mutuality. The mirror is duality and non-duality, and neither of those at the very exact same moment. This, of course, is impossible to adequately describe or explain, but it is exactly so in experience. And to touch the experience, you simply let go of preference and aversion. Dogen wrote, in actualizing the fundamental point, he wrote, when all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma, there are delusion and realization, practice, birth, death, Buddhas, and sentient beings. When the myriad dharmas all are without self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddhas, no sentient beings, no birth, and no death. Since originally the Buddha way goes beyond abundance and scarcity, there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. Yet, though it is like this, simply flowers fall amid our longing, and weeds spring up amid our antipathy. The first three sentences are simply descriptions or explanations of the old mirror. But the last sentence, yet, though it is like this, simply, flowers fall amid our longing, and weeds spring up amid our antipathy. This is Genjo Koan. This is a lived, breathing, utterly engaged reality of the ancient mirror. To add or subtract allows dust to alight, not on the mirror, which forever sparkles and casts bright light, but on your own eyes, causing distortions and disturbances where none need be. So please trust your situation, trust your practice, trust your life. It has brought you to this moment, the best moment, the only moment for you to wake up in. And that is enough. And that is contentment, the antidote to climate change and to its havocs.